We are talking today with Joan Claybrook. She is president of the National Consumers Organization, Public Citizen. Joan, thanks for spending time with us today.
Absolutely.
Let me begin and ask you if you would tell us a little bit about Public Citizen.
Well, Public Citizen is a national nonprofit organization. It was founded in 1971 by Ralph Nader. He left 10 years later. I've been the president ever since. And everyone still thinks he runs the organization, but it's not true. I do. And we get involved in a wide variety of issues. Healthcare is a major issue that we work on. And prevention of injury and death to people. Auto safety is a major activity that I personally am involved in because I used to regulate the auto industry in the U.S. Department of Transportation many, many years ago under Jimmy Carter. And we also work on energy issues and energy prices, so we're very busy these days. We work on international trade, and we've been involved in CAFTA and NAFTA and the WTO, and we were out here for the Seattle event a number of years ago, 1999. And we work on campaign finance reform and liability issues, access to the courts, Freedom of Information Act. So it's quite a wide variety of issues, and we have doctors and lawyers and economists and writers, and we have about 100 employees.
And you are in town for the release of a report about medical malpractice. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. We did this study on medical malpractice because it's an issue that's been very contentious. And there happens to be a very fabulous database called the National Practitioner Data Bank. It was created in 1989 by legislation, by Congress. And the American Medical Association went along with it on the basis that no doctor's name would be released to the public. So it has a lot of statistics and data, but the doctors are identified by number as opposed to by name. And the only people who have access to the names are hospitals that are going to employ a doctor, and they agree to release information and so on. So we took all of this data, and we looked to try and answer a number of questions because there is an initiative here in November, Initiative 330, and also a competing one that is more consumer-oriented in our view, and that's number 336, which we favor. We oppose 330. So what we looked to see was, are doctors really leaving Washington State? Are key specialties leaving Washington State? Have payments from either settlements or jury decisions in medical malpractice gone up or down in recent years? How about the amount of the payments? Have they gone up and down in recent years? And have they caused the the jury or settlement payments caused the big increase in doctors' premiums? Because that's what the doctors have said, and they've had all these rallies and complaints and said that they're being forced out of business as a result. This was a couple of years ago that the rallies were. And the legislature has been grappling with this, and it can't seem to leave Washington State, this issue. It just keeps hanging in here. So we thought we would take a look at it, and what we found is that the number of malpractice payments on behalf of doctors has declined a huge amount since 1999, which was really sort of the very beginning of when people started to think there was a little crisis going on. Not as much here, but in some other states. And that increased more in recent years. And so the number went down about 35% from, this is in the number of payments, from 1999 to 2004. And then there was a 42% drop in the total value of the malpractice payments, the value now, the dollar amount, between 1997 and 2004 when adjusted for medical inflation, that is, the cost of medical care. So it's a higher inflation cost than regular inflation. So the drop between 2002 and 2004, however, was still 30%. So it's been quite a significant drop in the value or the cost of the payments by doctors in medical malpractice settlements and jury awards, as well as in the number. And the number of million-dollar payments has also declined when you adjust the dollar amounts for inflation over the years. And there were two payments in, I think it was 2004, and there were 10 in 1997. So the number has gone down. But there's still, the number two shows that there are not that many that are over $1 million. And yet you know that the cost of a severe injury for medical malpractice can cost often millions of dollars to the family. So it's a small portion of the real cost. And then we found that Washington doctors' malpractice payments overwhelmingly benefit those who are most seriously injured. There is a claim that has been floating around both here and other places that people are taking advantage of the system, and they're not really that badly injured. But fully 85% of the payments made are made for people who are really seriously injured, and that's according to the National Practitioner Data Bank. And then in terms of the population adjusted number, just to adjust so that you have the equivalency, the number of filings of malpractice cases is down 23% from 1995 to 2004 per 100,000 population. And then the malpractice payouts attributable to obstetrics cases, which is one of the ones that a lot of people were worried about because people were saying that the OBs were leaving the business. The malpractice payments for those types of cases are down significantly, 25% between 1994 and 2004. The overall finding, the thing that really I think is most stunning to people, is that 4% of the doctors cause 48% of the payments. That's really a stunning figure. So what it essentially says, and by the way, this is true nationally and in every state. It varies from 4% to 5% of the doctors, from 48% to 54% of the payments, the amount of the payments. And what that shows is that there is a small number of doctors who have a lot of malpractice cases. And they're, again and again, they end up having to pay for it. And the other thing that is quite interesting is that Washington State is ranked by the Department of HHS in Washington is in the bottom 10 of the worst states in terms of enforcement for doctors who commit malpractice. So, and I guess the last thing I would say, which is just a very interesting issue, is that the Institute of Medicine, the National Institute of Medicine, did a study in which they said approximately 100,000 people, up to 100,000 people a year, are killed from medical errors in hospitals. And that doesn't include procedures in doctors' offices and so on. So it's not that this is a small issue. It's a huge issue in terms of injury to the public. You know, 42,000 people are killed in auto crashes a year. Twice that number, up to twice that number. It's hard to get the exact numbers, but up to twice that number are killed from medical malpractice. And it could be much more than that, given that they only measure hospitals. Yet, a lot of hospitals and doctors have ignored the opportunity for prevention of these injuries, which, of course, then reduces the number of lawsuits that would be filed, because people don't file lawsuits by and large if they're not injured. These kinds of lawsuits are very costly, very expensive, and most patients never want to go through a malpractice lawsuit because it is so hard on them emotionally. And so about 1 in 10 of the people who could file such lawsuits do. So in fact, the problem is a lot larger than the lawsuits would suggest or reveal. So our concern is that there has been a lack of attention to prevention, and that that's the real remedy here, is disciplining the really bad doctors, and there are a small number of them, and prevention. And the anesthesiologists, who had been subject to a lot of lawsuits in the past, decided that they were going to grapple with this issue of prevention. And they undertook a major program. There was quite a significant Wall Street Journal article about it in June. And they engaged in all sorts of changes and procedural changes in the way that they did their work, and they looked for problems and why they'd been sued and so on. And they have drastically reduced the number of lawsuits and the number of deaths and injuries, drastically reduced them. So that's really the message that I think, the hopeful message that we all ought to be thinking about, is how can we reduce the pain to the public and the injuries that they suffer, and also the lawsuits. And that also would reduce, of course, the liability premiums for doctors, because a lot of good doctors are paying through the nose for the mistakes of bad doctors.
So have the anesthesiologists, have they seen their premiums reflect the changes that they implemented?
They have. Their premiums have gone way, way down. Absolutely.
So what mechanisms are there currently for dealing with and or focusing with this 4 to 5% of doctors that are causing the malpractice?
Well, the work is done medical board by medical board across the country at the state level. It's not a national enforcement process. That's, each state has its own state medical board, like each insurance commission regulates the insurance industry across the nation. And there's some that are a lot better. Washington State's one of the worst. And I think that's just unacceptable. And I really think it's shocking that the doctors would go out and you know, have these big rallies and blame the victims of their bad work when they haven't taken the steps that they could themselves take to make sure that the bad doctors don't continue to do this harm. And the insurance industry generally does not want to get involved in this because they don't want to make enemies out of the doctors. And I think that one of the reasons that the doctors coalesce with the insurance industry rather than with consumers to try and get those premiums down and really grapple with the insurance reform that is needed is that doctors don't like to be sued. And I completely understand that. They don't want to be sued, and no one wants to be sued. But the fact is that there is a really positive way of stopping lawsuits, and that is by prevention. And it's totally within the hands of the hospitals and the doctors. They can do that themselves. And the Institute of Medicine put out a whole report on how to do it and how to cut errors, like stop relying on doctors' handwriting because no doctor writes so that anyone can read it, and use computers. And it's one of the things the anesthesiologists themselves did. Do a lot of the kinds of prevention of infections that some hospitals are doing a lot better job at than others. I mean, you probably have heard for yourself, there's, well, hey, don't go to that hospital. They have a lot of infections. You don't want to stay in the hospital too long. You might get an infection. You might get pneumonia. So there are a lot of things that hospitals can do just in that area. So when I say medical errors, I don't just mean doctors, but there's a small group of bad doctors that should be removed from the system, and that there are a lot of problems within the hospitals themselves that can be corrected. And the combination is killing up to 100,000 people a year.
Now, do you think that doctors overall are aware of that it's a small percentage of doctors that are causing these malpractice suits?
I truly don't think that most doctors know that. This is data from the National Practitioner Data Bank that has to be calculated, and it really hasn't been given a lot of visibility. It's been in news articles, but it really hasn't been in it very widely. And it's one of the reasons that because we've done studies, not only this study we're releasing in Washington State, but we've done them in about 20 states across the country during the course of all the malpractice initiatives or legislation that have been going in the last 3 or 4 years. And so we've seen that most people, most media, most doctors, most public, they don't know that it's a small number of doctors that are a real source of the problem. And if you just think, if you just cut out that 48% of the payments, that cuts the cost in half of medical payouts. And that's got to drastically reduce the premiums. Just that alone. Just that alone. And you also save a lot of patients from terrible harm.
So it makes a little bit of sense that the doctors wouldn't be savvy to this information, but the insurance companies are
absolutely
very savvy and number crunching. So why aren't they bringing this to doctors' attention and, in the long run, saving themselves money?
Well, the insurance industry, amazingly enough, has used the concept of a crisis in lawsuits as a way of raising their premiums. It's become a marketing mechanism for them. And so when the interest rates go down, when the economy goes down, their way of keeping their profits at a steady state is to raise premiums. And they don't like to say, well, that's what we're doing. So they blame lawsuits. And it's just incredibly convenient for them. And they've been doing it now for 25 years. The first time they started this was 20 years. They started in 1985. And I happened to just become the president of Public Citizen at that time. So I kind of got involved in it. And I was stunned. And the National Practitioner Data Bank didn't exist then. But we did a couple of studies in particular states where they had better data and found that the same trend was the small number of doctors cause these large amounts of payouts. So the insurance industry finds it as a convenient way of raising their profits, keeping their profits at a steady state, is to blame lawsuits. Doctors don't like to be sued, so they align themselves with the insurance industry. And the public really is uninformed, and there's a lot of a capacity to communicate by the insurance industry and the doctors. And so a lot of people end up believing this, but they have no idea that so many people are killed every year in medical malpractice, which is horrible. And they have no idea that it's a small number of doctors that are doing the major part of the harm.
So is it the insurance companies that are the primary backers behind initiatives like Initiative 330 then in Washington State?
They are, and they also have given, I think, like $600,000 to the medical society to help them push this. So they are the funder. In every state that I've been in, which is many states now, they are a major funder of these initiatives or legislation and the lobbyists that they require. And, you know, really, I work with the auto insurers a lot on auto safety, and the position that the auto insurers have taken is that we can create safer cars, safer highways, safer environments for driving. We can put better rules on drunk driving, and let's work on prevention so we can keep our premiums down. And that wasn't always their attitude, but in the last 20 years or so, they have really made a huge contribution, and I work with them hand in glove every day on auto safety issues. And it's just incredibly disappointing that the medical malpractice insurance industry does not do the same thing. And here they could. They should not insure these bad doctors. They continue to insure them. It's just really outrageous, in my view, that they do that. And so allow these doctors to continue practicing. And the other issue is that's a real problem also is that, you know, even if a doctor is delicensed in a state, they can go to another state and practice. And that has happened. And the insurance industry can help to stop that. And they haven't. So I put a lot of the blame here on the insurance industry, and I put some blame on the doctors because the doctors are real smart. Most doctors are pretty smart, and I think that they have just taken the wrong road on this issue, and they should be working to try and protect their patients or the patients of other doctors as well by having some major reforms in the medical system.
Well, prior to those reforms taking place, are there places where people can turn to get information about doctors that perform malpractice and or facilities that are poor?
Yes, you can go to your state medical boards, and they do have information that is available, and they often have it by the name of the doctor. Some do, some don't. I don't know about Washington State. I'm sorry, I should have checked that. I don't know. But I do know that they have not initiated a program for cutting medical errors. And they should definitely do that, whether it's in the hospitals or whether it's in disciplining doctors. But you can go to your state medical board, and generally that information is publicly available. Public Citizen published for a long time something called Questionable Doctors, which was a national publication as well as state-by-state publication as well as on the web that listed from the data from each state medical board the names of bad doctors and what they'd been disciplined for. And it was just a horrendous amount of work. And in part, we did it because some state medical boards didn't make it easy to get that information. But there's been a really significant improvement in that. And so we've stopped this now. We don't publish it anymore. We just recently stopped. And so in most cases, you can go to your state medical board and check out a doctor before you use that particular doctor. You can also, when you go to the doctor, you can ask them, or you call it for the appointment, say, I'd like to know whether or not this doctor's been involved in any disciplinary proceedings, and I'd like to have the records of that. One of the reasons, you know, that a lot of people file lawsuits is they can't get information about what caused the injury or death of their loved one. And they try and get the hospital to give them the records. The hospital won't do it. They try and get the doctor to give them. There's a code of silence here. And so this whole attack on the patients by saying you shouldn't file a lawsuit is even more ludicrous when you look at it from that perspective, which is sometimes families do it because it's the only way they know what happened. Some hospitals like Johns Hopkins and hospitals in Kentucky, it just sort of spotted across the country, are beginning to realize that if they're honest with the patient's family, they're much less likely to get sued. And so because a lot of people just get totally outraged, they can't get the proper information, and they know it has to be something other than what they've been told. And so that's, you know, yet another thing that a lot of hospitals and doctors could do to reform themselves is to just be honest with the people. And they might ask for a settlement for the, you know, cost that the family suffered, but they often will not sue. So there are lots of ways to stop lawsuits. This initiative and legislation to cap damages, if I could comment on that for a minute, is not the way. The reason that cap on damages, and this is on non-economic damages, it's not on the medical cost part, but it's on the pain and the suffering and the disfigurement or the brain damage, the lack of ability to think and so on. The reason that really doesn't work is because the people who are injured the worst are the ones who are capped. If you have a minor lawsuit or a smaller lawsuit, then you're not going to reach the cap. But if you have a major injury, that's when you're going to reach the cap. And that's why it's so grossly unfair. And also, non-economic damages really haven't grown very much in the last decade or two. In Texas, in 1987, they passed some malpractice legislation. And one of the deals there was they had to collect really good data. So they could, when the next time this issue came up, they could look at the data. And so Public Citizen has a Texas office, and our Texas office went and got all the data from Texas about 2 years ago on non-economic damages. And generally these trends are the same state to state. And in Texas, there had been virtually no increase in non-economic damages. So even if lawsuits were the problem, which they're not, capping the damages, it didn't make any difference. That's not going to cut the cost that much. And it's only going to hurt more the people who have already been most harmed by the malpractice.
State medical boards, who decides who is on those?
Well, generally the doctors do. And one of the reforms that's in Initiative 336 is to have more patients or private members, individual members, non-doctor members, be a part of it, because they, in a way, become the conscience of the state medical boards. Now, this is the enforcement arm, as opposed to the trade association, which is often called the medical society, which is the one that does the lobbying for the initiatives and so on. But the state medical board is the enforcement arm, the one that disciplines doctors. And I think that you should have not just one or two representatives, but you should have, you know, out of 12 or 15 or 20, should have a significant portion, you know, at least 20% should be private members who have, you know, they could be nurse practitioners, or they could be people who have some scientific training, or they could just be public members, you know, who are smart and have a conscience. And they then really can turn the way the medical board behaves. And I think that that is the best way to do that.
As well as it sounds like that we need more citizen input and regulation over the insurance industries.
Well, absolutely. And that happened in California with Proposition 103 in 1988. In 1975, they passed a cap on damages, very severe cap on damage, $250,000, with no inflation adjustment. And so it's still $250,000 now, 30 years later. And so they also put a limit on attorney's fees, which is also in this initiative, 330. That, by the way, outrages me, because it doesn't limit the attorney's fees for the insurance company or for the doctors. It only limits the attorney fee for the consumer. And the reason they do that is so that the lawyer will be unwilling to risk taking the case. Because if he has a limit on his fees and a cap on damages, it means that if it's an expensive case, and you know that the consumer lawyer on medical malpractice cases, they pay all the costs up front. And usually these cases cost $100,000 to prepare for, because you have to get all sorts of evaluations of the person who is malpracticed against. You have to take all sorts of depositions or inquiries of the doctors. I mean, it's very expensive to prepare for these cases. So if they have these limits on what the recovery can be, and there's also limits on what they can get paid, then they're less likely to take the cases, and that's the whole point. But anyway, in terms of insurance reform, which is what you originally asked me about, in 1975 they passed this initiative in California, and they put all these limits on, and the cost of medical malpractice insurance kept going up, up, up. It had no impact at all. And by the way, it's had no impact in other states in recent years, in Texas, and where they passed a draconian bill, and Nevada and Mississippi. Within 6 months, the insurance industry back asking for increases in premium, or actually doing the increase in premiums. So what happened in California was that there was also problems with auto insurance costs and so on. So it was caused a lot of anger, and so an initiative was passed, a very barely passed, but it was passed, that actually rolled back the premiums. And it set up a system where the insurance industry cannot automatically set their own rates, which is what's true here in Washington State. The insurance industry just announces what the rates are going to be, and then they go into effect. And the only way that they can be monitored is if they have to be rolled back by a later evaluation. So they passed this initiative in California so that they have to get approval for their rate increases, and they give citizens the right to participate so they can be parties to this whole case. And what's happened is that citizen consumer groups have from time to time participated and gotten limits on what the increase can be, or sometimes no increase at all because it isn't justified. And the burden then is on the insurance company to show why the costs have gone up and why they have to increase the premiums. And what happened in Washington State was that they had these big premium increases, and the doctors, you know, went crazy. And I can understand that. I mean, if you know, the cost to the doctors, they can't practice if they have to pay these huge rates. And so then the insurance commission finally took a look at them, and I think many of your listeners are aware, they made them give a refund of $2.25 million over 2 years in 2003 and 2004. And so the doctors have gotten some relief right now. But these premium increases just, you know, angered them so much that they attacked their consumers and tried to push for these limits on malpractice lawsuits.
All right. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. What final thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I'd just like to hope that they look at the facts of these issues rather than the hyperbole and understand why the 330 initiative is likely to make it very difficult for malpractice lawsuits to be filed. And malpractice lawsuits are very effective in forcing change in doctors' procedures and so on. Unfortunately, he hasn't gotten enough of the doctors who are really bad out of the system, but they are effective, and they do protect those who are most badly injured. And 330(6), which is what we favor, does make some modest reforms. It's not huge, but they make some modest reforms in the malpractice system. And they do give consumers a greater voice and in determining the policies that govern both the enforcement against doctors as well as the patient's rights. And so I hope that your listeners will have a chance to evaluate both sides. And if they ask me, I would say no on 330 and yes on 336.
All right. How can people find out more about Public Citizen?
We have a web page that's about 15,000 pages. It's very extensive, but it has a nice guideline to it. And it's www.citizen.org. www.citizen.org. And we have a lot of information on medical malpractice, including the report that we're putting out and background information and lots more.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much.
We've just been speaking with Joan Claybrook. She is president of the National Consumer Organization, Public Citizen.